water tank, which is where the News Times is now. Yeah, there's some remnants of that building there still, aren't there, or not? I don't know. I know that for a long time after they took the water tank down, the house beneath it was there, but I couldn't tell you if it still is. Then my grandmother recorded on her last trip to Portland, I think in 1891, when she was a very old lady, that they had electric street lights. Electricity had come to Portland. And she said, you know, it's just as easy to go calling in the evening as it is by daylight. to have electricity. And a year later, she could report that Forest Grove had electricity that had been put in the church and certainly was an addition to the evening service, taking the place of the coal oil kerosene lamps that were in use before that. Then the telephone. Somewhere around the same time as electricity was coming to Forest Grove, I don't know exactly which, one of the Hughes brothers set up a telephone system. It was the uncle to, to Beth Potland's husband, and not his father. And he had the first automobile, as far as I can remember, in Forest Grove. It was a roadster, and the lineman used it running around on maintenance. And the lineman was Sammy Todd. And would you believe it that Sammy Todd later was a very dignified Forest Grove dentist. But anyway, in his teens, he was a lineman, and he gave me my first ride in an automobile. He had occasion to come down and call on my father, and he invited me to ride down the long way to the street. And my father permitted it, and I got in. And we started, I thought I was going to be jerked into next week. But it was Forest Grove's first car, as far as I know. And my brother said that before paving came in, he could stand on our front yard and look over toward Gales Creek and tell that a car was coming by the cloud of dust that was rising, or he could look over to North Main Street and see that a car was coming by the cloud of dust that was rising. So you can understand that the coming of the cars was a very potent item in the paving. Now, let's see. Telephone, electricity, and I think I've dealt with those modernizing features, and I do want to interpolate here what I didn't tell the PEO women, and that was something about Naylor's Grove. You remember that one of the first settlers was a man that I always knew as Deacon Naylor, although I knew him only by name because he was long enough before, but his sons, or some of them, were still here. And there was a grove that was called Naylor's Grove. And I remember very vividly that we had 4th of July celebrations there. And I want to remember one particular 4th of July celebration where there was a prize for the largest family in attendance, father, mother, and children. And the man who was displaying the prize held up this big box of hard candies that was going to be presented to the family. And he was trying to show it to the audience, and he spilled some off, and he said, come on, kids, and there was a race for the area where the bandstand was, where he was standing, and I think most every child there probably got at least a suck. And then there was always this picnic dinner, potluck picnic dinner at those occasions, and there were sometimes old bicycle racing and that sort of thing. The track there wasn't long enough for horse racing, but there were bicycle racing. And thereby hangs another tale about my brother. He got knocked down by one of the racing bicycles. He got quite a cut in his head and had to have some stitches in, but they called the hack to take him home. And that made me think, although I have no further evidence, that perhaps the hack served as an ambulance for the years before we got a proper ambulance in Forest Grove. I can't say for sure, but at least I know that on one occasion it was so used, although my brother is very indignant and said, I didn't need an ambulance, I wasn't that bad hurt. And eventually, Mueller's Grove was given to the city of Forest Grove. And my senior breakfast, I graduated from Civic in 1923, we went to the Naylor's Grove for it, because by that time there were glass plates and water pipes with sort of sinks attached to it. And so we thought we'd be really up and coming. One of our class members lived across the street, so we girls went and made donuts and brought them in trays, raw, over to the Grove and fried donuts over the gas plate, so we had fresh fried donuts as a part of our senior menu. I'm sorry to say, oh, and I think the Adventists camped there at least once that I remember, because with the water and the gas they could get along very well. So I was very sorry to hear when I was overseas that the city fathers thought it was too expensive, they couldn't run it, so they sold it for residence. I'm not sorry for the people that got it for residence area, but my brother says that you look at the big trees there, you wouldn't really want to believe that when my father was a little boy he saw deer jumping over the little fir trees growing up. It was evidently a part of Tarleton Plains that the fir trees had been burned down, and when they weren't kept down, they began growing up, and so that the deer weren't forgetting their old feeding places. And I thought that was an interesting little sidelight to me, to think that Naylor's Grove, as I had always thought of a beautiful big part of the virgin forest, wasn't. It's the trees that all grown up after the settlers came. I didn't mention youth delinquency when I was talking to the PEO, and there wasn't too much of it that I could find, but I did find two interesting examples. One was that we had a Chinese laundry in Forest Grove, as many places had, and one day it burned down. And Ernestine Brown Davidson is my authority, that when they asked the boys who had started the fire why on earth they did it, they said, oh, it was so much fun to watch his pigtail bobbing. And the other delinquency that I turned up was when the local justice of peace had to discipline some boys because they were standing outside early Baptist church that soon gave up the ghost and is no relation, so far as I know, to the present Baptist church in Forest Grove, and were making catcalls and noises and otherwise disturbing the meeting. I don't know what excuse they gave because I didn't hear, but anyway, those are the only two instances of juvenile delinquency that I have any evidence of. I expect there were more, because I think boys will be boys in most any town, but as one middle-aged woman said in regard to some tombstone tipping in one of the cemeteries here recently, she said indignantly, why, we used to go to the cemetery so we could have a place to smoke and talk and quiet place, but she said we would have never thought of tipping over tombstones. Well, when the Lewis and Clark Fair came, there were many visitors to the fair, and following the fair, there were quite a large settlers, especially from the Middle West, came out to Oregon, and Forest Grove got his share of them. At that time, Dorothy Seymour, family, the whole Higby family came, and Dorothy and her husband and family came along with Grandma Higby and Mrs. Seymour's brother, and half older half sister, and so on. And it seemed to me that by and large, the people that I know that came following the Lewis and Clark Fair became assets in Forest Grove. And I have one amusing incident that occurred. How many of you knew John Thornburg? You remember he was sort of a well-built gentleman. When we were at a church meeting one night and sitting around sociability, one of these ladies from the East said, "You know, since I came to Oregon, I've gained 3 pounds." And another one looked at her scornfully and said, "Well, I can beat that. I've gained 5.5 pounds." And somebody else said, "Well, I can beat that. I've gained 11 pounds. I heard this myself, so I'm, this is one thing I'm sure of. And Mr. Thornburg was sitting there, and I saw his eyes twinkling, and being a little person, I was all ears at this adult conversation, and he said, "Well, I can beat all of you. I've gained over 200 pounds since I came to Forest Grove." Now, I didn't think that the Indian school in Forest Grove had too much actual permanent influence on the city. I didn't think it was a factor in shaping Forest Grove environment. But you know, there seems to be so very little information about the Indian school that I thought maybe I should give you what little I've gleaned from my grandmother's diary kept during the last 5 years the school was here. And if you want to cut it off your film, you can. Grandma's diary of that covers these last 5 years, along with the other things she was commenting on in those days, begins, the other earlier diaries are stored elsewhere, begins with the arrival of the next to the last head of the Indian school. He was an army chaplain who was seconded from his army post somewhere, I think, in Wyoming or some that, and came. And at the same time as they were just getting welcomed into Forest Grove, a group of Spokane Indians came down with to bring a group of tribal children for the school. They came to call on grandmother, and she was thrilled because one of the chiefs, as a boy, had been the boon companion of her oldest son when they lived in Chemokine up near Spokane in the Whitman Mission. And she was so pleased, and she was going to, next day she was getting out her things to bake a cake for these little boys that she had known, I mean these grown men that she had known as little boys, when word was brought that the Indians had been hurried off. They had to keep an appointment with some Indian agent or army man that had something to do with the Indians, and so grandmother couldn't. But she had an intense interest in the Indians, and particularly when there were Spokane Indians and children of people that she had known in the days on the when she lived among them. And so she found herself welcome to the services that were held for the students at the Indian school, and also she went to some of their parties, like their Christmas party. Incidentally, the dear lady who occupied the McGillivra house with her father at this time persuaded some of her city church friends in Portland to prepare a Christmas gift for each boy and a boy and girl in the school. I was disappointed that Grandma didn't say what these gifts consisted of, but anyway, it was a happy thought to do something like that for them. She also mentions going to the home for tea, and also often says that this chaplain was would take quite often, maybe once a month, an evening church service at our church. so that they all approved of him very much. Forest Grove people worked for the school in some capacity. My Uncle Levi's wife, Belle Putman Walker, was often called on to substitute. The head of the school would think that a teacher was arriving from the east and wouldn't arrive, and so my Aunt Belle went over and substituted until they got someone. Or a teacher got disgusted and left, and my Aunt Belle substituted. So she had quite a bit of experience in the school.
Was there a relationship between the Indian School Pacific, or was it a separate school?
I have never found any evidence, but it's possible that shortly before this, perhaps, there was some sort of an agreement that Pacific University taught the students. I don't know, but I had never found any evidence of it. And I have not been able to get in touch with Grandmother's diaries of those days, and I'm sure she would have mentioned it had they done so. Then the people were doing that service that is so common in pioneer and country places where there's no hospital, sitting by the dying, and the mortality rate of the students, the Indians, was fairly high. And so she quite often mentioned so-and-so going to sit with a dying Indian, or even in one case, a white teacher of the school, a white man teacher of the school. It was quite sudden when this chaplain was called back to rejoin his regiment, or whatever organization the chaplaincy covers, and a new man came. I'm not mentioning names, but this new man who came was not well liked by the Forest Grove citizens. They accused him of trying to cheat them when he should pay them for the produce that they might have offered or sold to the school. I saw one memorandum that listed a load of apples, a load of cabbages for the Indian school. And as I said, I hope that they had some other things to eat besides cabbages and apples, although I'm sure that cabbages and apples were a good addition to whatever their diet was. And the Indian boys were very fond of fruit. Grandmother records bartering with them, and I don't know whether the boys instituted the barter or whether Grandmother did, for some of their old blue uniforms, and that's how I know the uniforms were blue, that were worn out that she could get carpet rags out of. And they took fruit and gave up their old uniforms. And this last man who came wasn't at all interested in having any religious services at the school. He just ordered the students to go to the Congregational Church. And I'll say to the credit of the Congregational Church that they not only welcomed them to the church service, but they organized a Sunday school class for them. And before they were transferred to Chamawa in Salem, when they put together a number of Indian schools to make Chamawa, over 20 Indian boys and girls joined the church. And that pleased me, of course, as you can imagine, and I expect it would have pleased you. It was while in this period of the Indian school that President Rutherford Hayes and his wife made a visit to Forest Grove. Ostensibly, they were coming to inspect the Indian schools and other government institutions in Oregon. They had a special train out from Portland, and it was late. So they took them to the house where they were to be entertained for lunch, and they ordered the students to march over for inspection, but he didn't go near school buildings to inspect the school as such. And some of the local people were introduced to them. Grandma said, "I was one of those." And she commented that she thought Mrs. Hayes was handsomer than her husband. Shortly after this, the union or the uniting of these various schools was announced, and perhaps the presidential visit had something to do with it. I've heard that the only reason for taking the school away from Forest Grove was that there wasn't sufficient land for developing. That I don't believe, because I think there was ample land, but I just don't believe it. And anyway, Grandma missed these boys, the Indians, very much. I think that covers about all I've been able to discover about the Indian school, and I'm glad to record it because I have difficulty in finding information about it. Well, those early pioneers that founded Forest Grove, if they were to come to Forest Grove today, I think they would be amazed at the size of the college. Grandma had a part in the building of the old college hall, the original building, and she thought it was so big she didn't think it would ever be filled. Of course, she lived long enough to learn that it was, and they would probably strongly approve of the pavement that did away with the dust, and I'm sure they would all look with amazement at automobiles, because my grandmother was the last of those Whitman group to survive, and she was beginning to hear that automobiles had been invented, but I don't think she ever saw one. And they would look at our big supermarkets. They would be amazed at the contents of the supermarket, but with their Sabbatarian anti-liquor views, they would be horrified at their being open practically 365 days of the year and selling liquor over the counter like food. I know that. And I imagine that when they went onto the campus and saw the amazing size of the buildings, even though they had probably seen at Harvard or Yale or some of the big universities in the East, much bigger buildings than Old College Hall, I think they would be amazed. And I'm not at all sure that they would approve no chapel on the campus and that sort of thing. But I think they have left their mark on Forest Grove, and I think that when a girl whose grandmother lived in Forest Grove and is married now and has some children and was thinking of coming back to Forest Grove, when she heard that they had some destruction down at Harvey Clark School, she said, "I didn't think Forest Grove had that kind of things happen." Well, I'm sure that you, better than I, can analyze Forest Grove today and what it is, and perhaps this background that I've given you will explain why some things are as they are in Forest Grove. Thank you for being an audience for me tonight.
This tape was recorded by Dr. Donald M. Kinch of Forest Grove. In reviewing and editing this presentation by Miss Nellie Walker, it should be pointed out that a slip of the tongue was made by Miss Walker in referring to the original three landowners of what is now Forest Grove. Harvey Clark, not Harvey Scott, was one of the original landowners. This slip was made twice, So please think Harvey Clark. The first two times the name Harvey Scott appears. Thank you. End of recording.